Well, the Fool's card of the tarot is a very complex card. One design will show a carefree lunatic about to fall over a cliff with a little dog yapping at his heels. And in another, he's a toddler holding a wolf on a leash. Not unlike our attempts to rationalize the meaning of anything we do in this life.
I think our first really major Fool's Journey, which is one of the smartest things that we ever did because it changed our lives forever, was the first time that we went to Europe.
Yes, indeed.
Which we did on a wing and a prayer and a song and...
And a motor scooter.
And the money that we had from one of the few episodes in our lives where we actually had a salary. We were university professors. And we just packed some minimal clothing and a one-burner stove in saddlebags, and we took sleeping bags and a pup tent, and we picked up a used motor scooter in London, and we just took off without plans, just living from day to day, going as far as it seemed interesting to do, shopping from the groceries of the towns that were there, drinking the local booze of whatever it was, which was everything from red ink to something absolutely divine.
And breaking down and freezing.
And getting caught in the rain and discovering, my God, what a wonderful thing it is to just be wherever you are at the moment that you're there.
And survive.
Yeah.
We'll talk about that another time. Our second story is a rebroadcast. When I introduced this a couple of years ago, I said, well, this is about responsibility. But coming back to it, I thought, it seems so outlandish to think you could possibly have a profound effect on a human life for a dollar and a quarter. So this definitely qualifies as, ta-da.
Fool's Journey number 2, Mark Gold.
Mark Gold had, well, in some ways, a fairly normal childhood, if we were completely honest about what a normal childhood is for a lot of people. Preparation for life.
Well, I grew up in Atlantic City, New Jersey. My father was a city photographer. Like, he worked at the nightclub, the 500 Club, run by the Mafia, where Dean Martin and Jerry Lewis got together, and Sinatra would come there, And I started working when I was like 7, selling newspapers, going into whorehouses and to bars and hotels. And it really, when Atlantic City was in its heyday, I knew I wanted to get out and travel. When I was 14, I told my parents that the Scouts were having another weekend up at Lake Lenape, but they weren't. And I got on a bus and just spent the weekend in New York City and came back and didn't tell them until I was 40. And then... I wrote a newspaper column when I was a freshman in high school, but then LSD and the hippies and the Beatles and John Kennedy and everything went from black and white to color, and I had a choice between LSD and algebra in high school, so algebra had to wait. And so I came out to California. So I lived in a commune, and I got a job with the landscape gardener. And after 30 minutes of digging ditches, I decided to go to college, even though I hadn't finished high school.
Between then and now, Mark has made many journeys, way too many to tell at one go. He became a school teacher, got married, was teacher of the year in Manhattan in 1977, back to California to grad school at Berkeley, medical psychology, worked with cancer patients, then heroin addicts, then the first cases of AIDS, and administered a huge project. Finally burned out at that, started teaching at community colleges, and that's what he does now, part of the year.
Well, basically, Jewish kid from New Jersey, how I got interested in India and Tibet, I really can't tell you. When I was 7, I had this dream that I'm standing on Mount Everest in t-shirts and short pants, and somewhere where Andhra Pradesh would be was a village, and there was a man with a turban and a wife with a sari and a little boy and a little girl looking at me with their hands gesturing like, come, come. So I woke up and I told my father, and I said, Dad, I'm going to India. He said, are you nuts? It's expensive to fly then, you know? He said, Indiana, forget India. I said, no, I'm going to go. So he said, okay, you can go, but if you go, you have to do a mitzvah, which is a Jewish word, which means a good deed. I said, what am I going to do for these people? He said, you figure it out when you're a man. So he died when I was 14, and I kept this interest in India. And then finally, I got divorced in the mid-80s, and shortly, about a year after that, I really fell in love with a girl, a German girl. And After a couple of years, she went back to Germany, and I went into the biggest depression of my life for about a year. And almost to the day, I had that same dream. I mean, really, the same Mount Everest and all that. So I said to myself, okay, Mark Gold, you can't have what you want, number one. How about number two? And I had this image of going around the world as a kind of healing thing. You know, I like dramatic, you know, no going around the block for me.
He was between jobs. The kids were with their mother. He started around the world, Hong Kong, Calcutta, Darjeeling. And out of the fog, literally, he met a Tibetan who took him to visit a painter of silk.
So off we went in the darkness of these steep streets to really a slum. And there was this corrugated tin shack, and he knocks on the door. And, you know, here you knock on the door, someone doesn't know you. It's like, yes, what do you want? There, it's like, it's almost like they're expecting you. Oh, please come in and offer you something to drink. And there was this very nice young man named Tinne Gyatso and his wife and three-year-old boy and parents. And he was a fantastic painter and a great guy, and we became good friends. And I noticed his wife would cock her head kind of funny when people would talk. And he said she has some terrible hearing problem. You know, these people were living on $600 a year. So I went to the post office, and well, there was one phone book in the town, but I found an ear, nose, and throat retired professor of medicine 3 hours down the mountain. So we went down there, and he announced that she had a raging infection in both ears and that she could easily die if left untreated, which it would have been. And he said, only one problem. I said, what's the problem? He said, well, we can fix it, we can cure it with an antibiotic in each ear 3 times a day for a week, but it's 50 rupees. That's just about $1.25. I said, no, we can overcome this problem, you know. So that saved her life, $1.25. And then it said doctor visit 100 rupees, sliding scale. So I pulled out a 100 rupee note, which is less than $2.50, and he refused to take it. He said, I cannot, you're my first American patient. I said, but I'm not the patient, she is. He said, no, I love three great Americans, Mr. Abraham Lincoln. I said, okay, he's great. Mr. Martin Luther King, I said, okay, he's great. And Mr. Michael Jackson, a funny trio. Anyway, so then he said, the right ear she won't hear from anymore, but the left ear is only half gone. If she gets a hearing aid, she'll hear it nicely. So off we went down the street, and there was a shop. Hearing aid was about $55. When she heard what that was in rupees, she said, don't do it, forget it, it's not worth it. It would be like if I told you you need a hearing aid, 50 grand, you know? So we kind of argued about it until I finally insisted, and he put the hearing aid on her, and I reached over, and I flipped that little switch. Well, you know, these Tibetans, they have beautiful faces anyway with the high cheekbones, but if you could see God in that moment, that was it, man. The tear went down her eye, and she said, I can hear, you know, and the kid was crying, the street traffic, and I looked at her, and I thought of what my father said. So then my wheel started turning, and this is 1990. And the next time I went in 92, I sent a letter to 100 people. It's a nice round number. And it just said, it was to my friends, my relatives, my favorite waiter. And I said, look, I'm going to India. They're really poor. $400 a year is the average income. So I said, you want to send me a dollar on up? Feel great about it. You know, if not, don't worry about it. I thought I would get $200-$300, put in $100 myself. I could do something. Well, I got $2,200. And I proceeded to go to orphanages and Mother Teresa centers and meeting people on the street. And I went all over India, and it blew my mind. It was the most fun and the most interesting, and things happened that would never happen to tourists. And a lot happened, a lot. And we gave it all away, and we documented it, and I wrote a little newsletter. And I thought, I don't know if I'll ever get here again. This is my second time. Well, I've been there 6 times now. And I've given away now almost $19,000. It's not Bill Gates, but it's one person can do something. I pay my own expenses. I just take out for the cost of the mailing and the newsletter and all that sort of thing. Of course, I'm not standing on the corner announcing it, handing out rupee notes. Some of it's random. You know, like I met a guy in a hotel. His father had a very bad broken leg, and they set it very poorly. So we just paid to have the father come and have it reset. And, you know, it was $40, you know. Another guy we met was going to die of tuberculosis, father of 3 children in Delhi, because he didn't have the money for the medicine, which is an outright cure. You take it for 9 months. So that was about $50-$60. And then we put him in business life. And we went to a warehouse a few blocks away, and we bought pens and pencils and chocolates and Indian beady cigarettes and notepads and miscellaneous stuff. And you can get a lot for that amount of money. And he started putting it out in front of his little hut. And people in the neighborhood came by. Oh, let me get a pencil. He paid 2 rupees. He sold it for 3. You know, that sort of thing. And I met him a couple of years later, and he was cured and looking good, and kids were in school. And he had, now he had two there's shops. A child care center for the children of the sex workers. And these kids used to just hang out in the bordello. You know, not the best place for little guys. And so we made a donation there. And I mean, if I was
Bill Gates.
I was in Lucknow, and there was this little girl, and she had meningitis, and she was in high fever, and she was panting and sweating. And so I asked the mother through his translation if I could approach the little girl, and she said yes. And kind of reached down, and in my bag I had a little magic wand with the little sprinkles in it and the water, you know. And I pulled it out, put it in her hand, and all of a sudden she stopped panting, this big smile and little teeth, and she grabbed it, you know, and squeezed my hand, and the doctor, he really got a kick out of it. And he came to the hotel a couple of days later, and he said, she's a lot sooner than we thought. And we theorized that something was taking me. And while I was on the rickshaw, the wheel fell off, and it broke down practically in tears. He lives in this thing. It's his bread and butter. And so I found someone who spoke Hindi in English. The carpenter, and he said, I went to this medical supply store, and he's been trying to sell this machine for 2 years. He sold it for $450 US. So we took some pictures, and then they put the first two babies under it with the little eye mask, because it's too bright. And he said it's going to save 200 to 300 babies a year. That's a buck and a half a life. So that's
one example.
I said, what do they need? He said, blankets, Kashmiri blankets. So we were at the marketplace in Leh, the capital, and he said, please, Mr. Mark, don't be offended, but if you go with me and we buy these blankets, we'll pay 5 times the price. Stand on the side and watch, you know. So we went and we bought a whole bunch of blankets.
He got the idea.
And by the way, a lot of times when we give the money, if we give a guy on the street, let's say 1,000 rupees, 20-some dollars, sometimes they'll say, well, what can I do for you? And what we usually say, whether they say that or not, is take a small portion of this and find somebody else who really needs it. You know, whether they do it or not, I don't know, but they always look very delighted because it kind of fits in and it gives them some dignity as well. I'm a realist. I'm a very practical person. If I look at all the problems of the world, I wouldn't be able to leave my bed, okay? So what I figure is, from the point of view of all the problems of the world, what I do is so infinitesimally small as to be completely meaningless. However, if I look at the individuals who actually get the help for that particular person, he's not saying, what about the other billion people? He's saying, wow, thanks a lot. I got bus fare to go back home to my parents. Or thanks a lot. My kid can go to school this year. Or thanks a lot. We can get that asthma medicine. What I picked up from my father was, don't end your life with the feeling that it didn't matter that you lived. Certain things I'm absolutely sure of. You know, if I go to the Mother Teresa Center in the slums of Calcutta, I'm just willing to bet money that they're not going to buy cocaine and go to Vegas. I mean, most of these people are so poor. I'm sure some of them have given it to their parents and they bought whiskey, you know. I'm sure it's happened. But all I can say is I'm vigilant and I've gotten very experienced. And I feel very confident that a very large percentage of our money goes to a good cause. You know, I love to follow my nose. I've been in lots of places where I was the only foreigner there. I've been in places where they never saw a foreigner. And sometimes I literally wander. I think I'll take that alley. And I've never been stabbed or robbed or attacked. Or even now, like there's civil war going on in Nepal, and I asked my friend who knows the area quite well, and he's been here, and I said, how's Nepal? And he said, not as bad as Oakland.
Okay, Mark, so what happens when somebody listens to this and calls and says, hey, this is great, can you use $1 million?
Oh, I can deal with that. As much as I like counseling and teaching, I would like to do this full time. And I would have a little office, and I would go out 3-4 times a year. You know, when the Cold War ended, people say, oh, what's America's mission now? What's America's mission now? I was like, duh. The planet is in huge trouble environmentally. The haves and the have-nots is going to produce unbelievable problems. The population is out of control. You're looking for a mission? You don't have to look too hard. So that would not be a problem. I've been accused of doing this because it makes me feel good. I accept that, yes, it makes me feel good. I like to feel good. I'm, you know, like that tough. The people who are getting the help could care less what my motivation is. So I just do it because, to me, it's the most basic human. I mean, there's not a lot of things I know for sure. You know, but one thing I do know for sure, and I don't see how anybody could deny this, and that is there is great suffering in this world. And if your response is to ignore it or want to make it worse, that's fine. My response is to, when I see another human being who has red blood like me and cries like me and laughs like me and, you know, like gets hungry like me, I just can't imagine any other response, you know. And so let those people say and do it as they would. You know, every day you open up the papers and it's like, oh my God, well, quit flapping your lips and do something. It's my attitude, you know. For me, it's an existential must. I have to do this. To do nothing, to look at all the problems of the world and reach the end of your life. Hey, Grandpa, what did you do about the environment and the starvation and the illiteracy and the poverty and the crime and the violence? Oh, nothing. I just watched the 49ers and drank a lot of beer and kept the door closed. To me, it's no answer, you know.
In Richmond, California, we were talking with Mark Gold. Mark's website with many, many stories is www.100friends, that's numeral 100friends.com.
Since we first broadcast this interview, his work has continued and grown. Make him a visit, and if you are so inclined, a contribution.
And remember, you can always, anytime, hear any of our past shows on our website, www.hitching.org.
Yeah, I need to say something here. I hope it is not too inspirational. In the United States, I mean, you probably don't save anybody's life for $1.25. But I want to echo Mark's comment about, okay, for the billions of utterly impoverished and oppressed human beings, well, this little stuff doesn't mean much. But last week at the Oregon Country Fair, a guy parked his pickup in a no-no zone, and suddenly there were cell phone calls all over the campground because the ice truck had to get into that space, and he came rushing back and couldn't find his keys. And for 15 horrible minutes, with ferocious hippies breathing down his neck, he searched and prayed. And later, my friend here, Elizabeth, went up and said to him, "Wow, that must have really been horrible for you." And his response was out of all proportion. It was huge gratitude and release. It wasn't even a buck and a quarter. It was just honest words. There's great hunger out there, I think, and we've all got the biscuits to feed.
So here's some snapshots of fools dreaming and remembering.
I dreamed I had a very good job on the astral plane.
Well, I dreamed coming right off the cliff. I mean, I was walking, just on air.
I dreamed of large marshmallows just bouncing from marshmallow to marshmallow.
I dreamt about being with my dog and my dog turning into this person, and it looked a lot like my dog, but suddenly I didn't trust him anymore. Maybe it's because I was attracted to him.
I dreamed I was at work and the day wouldn't end, but I learned that I could walk through the walls and nobody realized it but me.
I dreamed I was sitting on a toilet in the middle of a field.
I dreamed that I knew what was going to happen and it didn't.
I dreamed that all the bad things that happened were just dreams.
Remember your first day at school. And you didn't want to let go of your mother's hand.
I remember standing on the top rail of the fence.
Remember when you learned to ride your bike for the first time all by yourself without the training wheel?
Remember losing your virginity?
Remember crossing the street by yourself for the first time.
Remember the hail coming down.
Remember feeling weak and keeping going.
Remember the first time you got birth control, that little round box that made it safe.
Remember the first time you saw a naked person?
Remember when Dad left? And Mom was so bummed out, you never thought she'd smile again.
Remember the first time you had a pet die?
Remember the first funeral you attended?
Remember the first time you almost died and you laughed?
Remember that thing that never happened?
And the first time you touched skin that wasn't the same color as yours? And when you dreamed that you peed and woke up and found you had? And when your knee was bloody and full of gravel? And the first time you saw the skin grow back.
Remember swimming where you can't see the bottom. And camping out in the backyard in your tent the first time. And wondering what those noises were outside your tent in the dark.
And being at the Greyhound bus station in San Diego after 6 weeks in Mexico and being totally broke and having a woman come up to you and say, God told me to come here and give $20 to someone today, and it's you.
And the first time you actually sat behind the wheel in a car and felt it move out into traffic with your hands on the wheel.
Remember snow clumped on your sweater?
Remember singing at the top of your lungs?
Remember the sun on your body feels better than all words?
Remember that first kiss?
Remember getting the giggles and water flying out your nose?
Remember the first time?
Remember how it felt?
Remember how it smelled?
Remember where you left your keys?
Remember all your old phone numbers?
Remember your newborn child looking into your eyes.
Remember the smell of Crayolas.
Remember when everything was new?
Remember when everything was new?
Remember when everything was new?
That was Remember, which we put together with a bunch of friends.
Hitchhiking Off the Map is produced by the Spirit of Northern California.
Ah, yes.
All that stuff you hear about the spirit of the West and nature and the redwoods and the dawning of a new age, well, it's all true.
It's all true, and that's what supports the show. But what pays the studio rent and the costs are generous individuals such as yourself. Tune into the website, become a member of the Hitchhikers Guild, and help keep us on the air, www.hitching.org. And remember, you can listen to all our programs there, buy CD copies of Something You Want to Share, www.hitching.org.
And in the next 2 months, we met Renette while we were in Nevada City creating a new play based on a true local story from 1944. And in the next 2 shows, you will hear that play with its original cast. A community's struggle to come to terms with fear. Long Shadow.
And if you're in the North Bay on the final Friday of each month, we produce a sort of performance party that is absolutely unique to Sonoma County. The Hitchhiker's Cabaret Cauldron. Schedules on the website, www.hitching.org. This is Conrad Bishop.
And Elizabeth Fuller. Peace and joy.
And the other thing was when I was skiing was I realized that I thought, you know, I know I could die any time because you definitely feel that presence all the time. You're walking a tightrope. And I thought, if I died, my friends would never know how much I love them. I've never really let them know how much I love them. So I promised myself that when I came back home, no matter how corny it was, that I would tell them. And when I got back home, And to this day, I should say, I always tell my friends, whether I'm on the phone or it's just a hello passing in the street, I always say, I love you, because it's like, this could be it. You don't know how it works. And it's happened to me before where you miss someone and they're gone and you never said, I love you. So I came back and I definitely felt like a different person. I don't think you can go into that trip and go out of a trip like that the same. I just don't think it's possible.